You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Public Theater Shakespeare in the Park productions have become a staple of New York summers, but this season there's a twist. Now through August 1st, they're presenting this year's plays in repertory. And joining me now to discuss the 2010 season at the Delacorte Theater are Lily Rabe, who plays Portia in The Merchant of Venice, and Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who plays Paulina in The Winter's Tale and Nerissa in The Merchant of Venice. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today. Hello.
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 This is the first time that the Public Theater has done Shakespeare in the Park in repertory. They've done other in the other theaters. Do you know why Oscar Eustace decided that after 40 years, this was the year to do this? Did he talk to either of you about that?
Not really.
I know they're very happy with how it's going now.
They love it.
They are really loving it.
Well, of course, Shakespeare's company always performed in repertory.
Indeed.
So. Yeah. Sure.
In fact, many of the roles were probably originated and played by actors who were doing similar kinds of parts in other Shakespeare plays, like William Kemp, who originated many of the comic clown roles.
Right.
Marianne, there's still a lot of repertory being done in London, isn't there?
Yes, there is. I think they do quite a bit at the Globe now. Mm-hmm. And regional theatres, not just London. Manchester Royal Exchange, and many of the other theatres out there do that. Of course, the Stratford, they do a lot of rep.
Have you done much in the past?
No, I haven't really. Back in the old days, you know, just after leaving drama school, you know, you would do rep, but it wouldn't necessarily be two Shakespeare plays. It would be a modern play and a Shakespeare play or a Congreve or something like that.
Well, we've been seeing more rep in New York recently, but it's all English plays. There was the Coast of Utopia cycle. There were the Norman Conquests. They were brought over here from London. And I've always wondered why we don't see more of this other than in colleges. Had you done any during your years of training, Lily?
Rep? No, not in college. I'm trying to think if that was even. And where I went to school, there were so many productions every year, but they weren't doing anything in rep.
Although that's not an issue for you because you're one of a handful of actors who are in only one of the plays.
That's right. Though I still feel that I'm having a bit of an experience of the rep. It's really something to. When I went to see The Winter's Tale for the first time, I went to the final dress, and we were rehearsing right next door, you know, the two plays, and people sort of running back and forth between the two rooms. And then for the handful of us that were only in one or the other play, we would not be running back and forth between the two rooms. But when I first went to see Winter's Tale, it was like seeing my family. There is an incredible thing, which I'm sure always happens in the park, whether it's rep or not, this feeling of camaraderie and of really sort of building such an intimate family.
Is it a unique situation working in the park as opposed to just working in a regular theater?
It feels very unique to me. My goodness.
I mean, the elements, just being out there with the bugs and then being part of the play. You know, and having to deal with them and the heat.
Wind. It's wonderful.
Well, screaming madmen, you know, sirens.
And last year, Anne Hathaway was here, and she mentioned the raccoons. I don't know if the raccoons have come on
We've
the stage
seen
with
some
you.
Raccoons and rats.
Yes.
Rats.
Yeah.
Well, that has to be fun.
Under the stage right before my entrance the other day. It was sort of, I'm fond of raccoons. Though I think that they've calmed down. I think there was a time, maybe, was it during Hair? Or the one production, really, it was a problem with the audience. I think they were just constantly in the audience. And we haven't had that yet of people screaming because they were in.
I prefer that than them on stage.
<That's> you know, it's like,
you'd prefer for them, the raccoons, to come and sit on my lap, rather.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, well, they can be a distraction. It's probably almost as distracting as people having their cell phones ring or working on. There was during The Merchant of Venice, there was a young woman in the row in front of me who must have been related to one of the cast members, because throughout 90% of the performance, she just went through her BlackBerry. But then every so often she would perk up and watch everything that was going on the stage. Still,
you don't see. Sometimes there's something about being outside that you can actually see. Once the sun goes down, you can't. It's so big that you really can't see the lights of cell phones. But sometimes in a house, you can definitely see the lights of the BlackBerries and the iPhones and the cell phones.
How is it determined that some of you, you, Lily, Al Pacino, Linda Emmond, Ruben Santiago Hudson, would only be in one of the plays, not both?
I don't really know. I think it just was a sort of a puzzle that they were really trying to work out, and it just sort of that's how the pieces fell. That you know, and of course there are less female parts in Shakespeare than, but I think that it just worked out that two from each play, it just sort of happened.
I think, I mean, Ruben and Linda have expressed that they would have loved to have done both. You know,
it would have been fun.
Yeah, it would have been fun. Al has sort of said that he'd like to have been in both plays as well, and
but he's played Shylock before, and I think he probably felt that that was the most comfortable thing for him to do.
I don't really know.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people ask actors, well, how do you keep track of your part? Of course, when you're on the stage, you're very much in character, but I wonder about when you're doing rehearsals and you're running back and forth. There must be moments of confusion.
Well, there's a kind of weird thing that happens with the brain that only allows one of those parts to live at a particular time. Unfortunately, sometimes you're in the wrong rehearsal room when that happens, and then you're kind of struck dumb because you're just like, I don't know who this person is. I haven't quite found her yet. You know, I'm still living in Sicilia as opposed to Venice, and you know, but then it does click over, and fortunately, the two women that I play are so different that there is no way that you could confuse them.
Yeah, in fact, you become a very different person when you're playing Paulina, for example.
Oh yeah,
you're very sweet, not as Paulina as Nerissa, and then Paulina, you are a fury.
Yes.
She's so amazing in both
plays. Do you think that the audience gains something from seeing these two plays in such close proximity?
Well, I don't know how many people really get tickets to both.
Yeah, well, quite a few people do, and they love it. They are
everyone
really
I've spoken to who has had that
both plays
experience of seeing both, sort of,
and also seeing actors do very different things.
And they're such different plays of all of Shakespeare. I mean, really, they're just at such different ends, I think, of the spectrum.
My guests are Lily Rabe, who plays Portia in The Merchant of Venice, and Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who plays Paulina in The Winter's Tale, and Nerissa in The Merchant of Venice, now at the Delacorte Theater, with performances alternating, not exactly alternating, a couple and then a couple through August 1st. Should point out, tickets are free and available on the day of performance at the Delacorte Theater. You can also use virtual ticketing at shakespeareinthepark.org. Shakespeare's plays are never just comedies or dramas, but both of these plays really mix drama and comedy. The first half of The Winter's Tale is very dramatic. The second half is mostly comedy. And it's the reverse in The Merchant of Venice. Is that fun for an actor to be required to do both? Well, in your case, Marianne, you don't do any of the comedy in The Winter's Tale, but there are happier moments.
Yeah, there are happier moments. And some of it, I mean, some of the most sort of like heightened and angry moments, the audience needs such a relief that they are laughing at, you know, certain things that Pauline is doing or saying to Leontes.
And that happens in the trial scene in Merchant,
That happens in the trial scene because you build such a tension that people are like, oh, at any opportunity that they can get.
Well, Lily, it's hard to believe that The Merchant of Venice was once thought of and classified as one of Shakespeare's comedies.
A comedy, I know. Isn't that amazing?
Is that because making fun of Jews is no longer as acceptable as it was in past centuries?
I would say that I don't think that's why I don't know why it was originally a comedy, classified as a comedy. I remember not being able to find it in a big in a collection because I was looking in the I was at a friend's house trying to look up a line, and I was looking in the you know the tragedies and. Yeah. But they're so close to each other, comedy and tragedy, in so many of Shakespeare's plays that I...
Yeah, I mean, I think he's... To call it a comedy, I'm not sure. There are a lot of comical moments, even in the very, very serious moments. I think it's that thing about human recognition.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what makes those things funny, as opposed to it being, you know, it's not a slapstick comedy.
Well, you still have to wonder how it was perceived during Shakespeare's time. Well, because in more recent years, Shylock, we've seen some Shylocks who have been so sympathetic that they've kind of taken over. And then others who where he's still a bloodthirsty villain.
Yes, I don't think it should be.
And yeah, I guess I in Shakespeare's time, it must have been mostly the bloodthirsty villain.
But well, I think that there is a flaw then in the viewer because anybody who listens to what Shylock actually says and pays attention to what Antonio says about Shylock would see that this guy has been tormented, he's been kicked, he's been spat on, he's been abused. And so why should he not at some point want to fight back?
Antonio, he has good reason to be angry with Antonio and want
totally.
That flesh, that pound of flesh.
Totally.
The trial scene is so delicate in that way, and I think that it's a wonderful success if you, as a viewer, leave that scene. I've had a lot of people come see the show who it's so amazing to sit back and listen to them after discuss and debate how they feel about what happened in the trial and you know, really seeing the both what Portia does and what Shylock does, you know, really being able to identify with both equally. And I think that that is a tremendous success if that happens, if there's a real conversation instead of just your sympathy falling very clearly with one or the other.
Well, Portia does seem to be a rather contradictory character. She's very strong-willed, and yet she's bound by her father's test for potential suitors, and which I've never completely understood, considering how strong-willed she is. And then at the end, she gets almost childishly petulant in that whole business about the ring.
Oh, I don't see that as petulance at all, but no, I think that, you know, that last scene, Dan has done something, I think, very unusual, though.
Daniel Sullivan, your director.
Yes, Daniel Sullivan, the director. Though I feel it's hard to imagine it done any other way now, but I know that we you know, we've discussed how that last act was played very much for the comedy, I think. Mm-hmm. And Dan is really... Something else is happening in this production.
Well, you have two directors to deal with, Marianne.
Yes.
and I've read that they are very different. So that had to have been a bit confusing while you're working out these two plays in rep.
Yeah. I mean, it was very interesting. I think Daniel Sullivan is somebody who kind of holds back and lets things go and just sees where the actors go with their performances and what they want to do and then kind of starts to chisel away and hone in. He doesn't talk a lot. So you're kind of like, well, am I doing the right thing? Is this what you want? You know, whereas Michael is very sort of hands-on and, you know, I used to just love watching him watch the other actors because, you know, he'd be like, you know, or he'd be sort of frowning and banging himself on the head, you know. But I think that they served the plays well in their styles.
And both of them have directed Shakespeare in the Park in the past. Daniel with Twelfth Night last summer, in fact. Michael did Romeo and Juliet in 2007. Did they have any advice for you about performing at the Delacorte? As opposed to just getting into these parts as you would in any theater?
They both, I can only really speak about Dan, but he's so versed in the experience of of doing a play at the Delacorte, and he's been an incredible guide, I feel, and I'm sure Michael has been as well, mm-hmm. having had the experience, because it is very unique. Even just being mic'd is a new experience for me, certainly.
But it would be impossible for you not to be mic'd in this situation.
Yes, it would be.
On the really other hand, when somebody says something about the moon and you see the moon right up there in the sky.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Beautiful that is.
So this runs through August 1st, and then no more Shakespeare in the Park? Is it just too hot in August?
Oh, in August. I think it's – well, normally that second play does go through part of August, but I think because of the rep schedule, I'm not exactly positive, but I think that's why the season sort of is ending a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. Because normally I think the second play does go into
– Really?
Into August, I believe.
God help them.
Because we've had some Bikram nights.
Well, yeah, you'd also get a lot of mosquito bites. Just a moment about acting Shakespeare, because a lot of actors have all sorts of advice about it. The thing I've heard most often is the best way to approach Shakespeare is to simply trust Shakespeare. Is that your experience? Say the lines as he wrote them. Almost as David Mamet would have insisted that you do it, and it usually becomes quite clear to the audience.
I think that the one of the most incredible things about getting to do a play like The Merchant of Venice or Winter's Tale, anything Shakespeare.
But Marion gets to do both of them.
And Marion gets to do both. And sometimes says that I'm going to show up in my... one of my costumes in The Winter's Tale, because I miss them so much when I'm at home and they're out there. But I think it is amazing to be able to trust the text so much, and to have something where every day, and I think that you could do these plays. I feel that I could do this play and play this part 4 years and every day continue to be making discoveries, and that is such a joy, and that's Shakespeare.
Mm. Well, English actors seem to learn doing Shakespeare. They usually do a lot of it at school, and then mm-hmm. their first jobs tend to be in smaller Shakespearean companies. But for American actors, that's not the case. Did you grow up doing David Rabe or?
Well, no, I didn't. That was far too scary for me to do. Maybe some people did. But in college, we spent a lot of time on Shakespeare at where I went to school, just as part of the, if you were a theater major, mm-hmm. you really spent close to a year sort of only focused on Shakespeare in the acting classes.
And is this a return for you, Marion?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I haven't done theater for about, 11 years. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of baptism of fire doing two at the same time. But obviously being at drama school in London and working in the theater for like 10 years before anything else, it was a welcomed return. I was dying to do a play.
What about the weather? There are some nights when it's incredibly hot, other nights when there's a threat of rain. And then last night must have been a pleasure because the weather
beautiful.
Was just so nice.
It was beautiful.
And does that affect performances?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'd like to think that it doesn't, but it must do.
Well, you're wearing those heavy costumes.
You're wearing those heavy costumes. At one point, I get to throw off this cloak in one of the scenes, and it is so good to do that.
Glorious.
Just start ripping clothing off.
Well, we get we share a dressing room, and we have our quick changes together, and we're usually very excited to be
get them
tearing
off.
our clothes off in those moments, because it does get...
Yeah,
but we had a show, one of our earliest previews. There was this sort of light rain almost through the whole performance, and it was beautiful. But it was one of those the kind of rain where you almost don't feel it.
Yes.
And the audience, I had a lot of friends there, and they said, you know, we didn't really notice it, but then we realized when we got up that we were completely drenched.
Yeah.
Well, that's working in a mist. Although in Marianne, in The Winter's Tale, Paulina is somewhat mystical, isn't
yes,
she?
Yes, she is. And there's always a wind. There's always a light breeze at the end of the play when, you know, the statue comes back to life. And it's like everybody's like, okay, go, Paulina. Just get that breeze going.
Well, it's an interesting part because Paulina is really the only smart person in the room. She knows what's going on. Everybody else is kind of slightly confused. She's obviously a lot wiser than King Leontes, who's played wonderfully by Ruben Santiago Hudson. Mm. So, but that has to be, I don't know, Shakespeare did write wonderful women.
Oh, he
Portia
did.
Is the smartest person in The Merchant of Venice.
I would say Shylock is on, you know, I would say that she is very
well. She outwits
very
everybody.
Smart, even Shylock. But he's very smart. And Nerissa, they're but yes, Portia's intelligence is astounding. He wrote such incredibly strong, fiercely intelligent women.
Yeah, one of the actors that's in both plays as well, Jesse R. Martin, he plays Polixenes and Graziano. We were talking about Paulina very early on, and he said that an interesting thing that he'd discovered was if you want to know the truth in a Shakespeare play, just read the women's parts because they always tell the truth. And I was like, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'll have to keep that in mind. Just one more thing. You're playing with Al Pacino,
yeah.
who has played Shylock before, and in fact, in a movie version
yes.
some years back. Do you have to adjust to a performance that already pretty much has been honed?
Not with Al. He is recreating something not only just with this production, but I believe every night. He's so incredibly present and brave, and I have never for a second felt that he is bringing something into. I think he started in the same place that we all did on that first day, and we were with the text and you know, sort of slogging through it and figuring it out, and I would say that it couldn't feel more new and alive.
Just one more thing. Portia, your character in The Merchant of Venice, marries Bassanio, who's often described as a callow fellow.
Yes.
Do you ever think about whether they're going to live happily ever after?
I think about it a whole lot.
There's going to be a divorce about 2 days after the closing of the play.
I have incredible doubts about the future of their relationship.
I want to thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today. Lily Rabe and Marianne Jean-Baptiste, we're talking about the two plays that are being performed in repertory at the Delacorte Theater as part of Shakespeare in the Park from the Public Theater. Tickets are free, as I said. You can get all sorts of information because we have a link on ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with
Thank
us.
You Thank so you so much.
Up next, Professor Charles Ogletree looks into what last year's arrest of Harvard historian Henry Louis Gates Jr. says about race, class, and law enforcement in America today. And a reminder that you can see and hear gavel-to-gavel coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee's hearings on Elena Kagan's nomination to the Supreme Court, streamed live at WNYC.org. And tune in each night for NPR's wrap-up of the day's hearings at 8 p.m. on AMA 20 WNYC. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.